the namesake, but, and David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. And the verse prospering, the word prospering means acting wisely. And David was acting wisely in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. That to me is the key about the phenomenon of David's life. You know, the story, we're on the story of David and Goliath. And that, the story of David and Goliath isn't about a little guy beating up a big guy, and isn't about BSU beating up on a Pac-10 school or whatever. The story of David and Goliath is the story of somebody who had God with him and was well aware of that and honored him as God in a way. This is the magic, you might say, and the power and the productivity of David's life was based on his honoring God as God. He had a view of God. He was led by the Spirit of God. And the story of David and Goliath is certainly that story of somebody who did not view circumstances as what determined him. In fact, he did not allow circumstances to determine him. He allowed his view of God to determine him, what he believed to be true of God. So let's pray and then we'll go. So God, please, please, please continue to be patient. You know, there is no greater privilege and honor than, I should get on my face and on my knees. There's no greater privilege and honor than your presence here. Your willingness to come here and teach. Your desire to come here and restore your creation, your people, your sons and daughters to you. That is profound, and we should live our lives with the awareness of that profoundness. David's life was marked by the Spirit of God coming mightily upon him. And that functioned. He didn't become etherical or distant or theoretical in his thinking and moved away to a monastery. It had a very, very powerful impact on the practical realities of his life. And God, that's the way you want us to live. You don't want us to live impotent in our spiritual walks. So God, please, you know, I refrain from even wanting to comment on the things that are written here about David's heart and his attitude. God, I ask you to empower them. Empower these words of this book to pierce our hearts. Cause us primarily and foundationally and foremost to long to walk in this way. To long to live our lives the way David lived his life. It's a privilege and an honor, God, to be here with brothers and sisters and friends and you. Thank you, Jesus. Amen. So, chapter 17. And I spent a bunch of time last week and this week trying to find out some specifics. You know, I really wanted to, I kept looking, trying to find out how far is it from Bethlehem where David's father was. Maybe that wasn't where he was herding sheep, but that's where he seemed to pick up the food from his dad. Got up early in the morning first thing and went all the way to the battle that was happening with the Philistines and the Israelites in the Valley of Eden. It was kind of sweet. I pulled up a bunch of pictures and actually current pictures even of the battleground and where they supposed the battle with David and Goliath was and, you know, the hills that they were on when, because there's a pretty good description, you know, when it talks about a few towns that some of them they've unearthed as far as old towns go and stuff. So we have a fairly good idea. I wanted to see how long it was because it's just amazing to me. I mean, here's David. He was called, just the baseline. He was called, remember, his dad said, I want you to take these loaves of bread and I want you to take these cuts of cheeses and I want you to go to your brothers and see, make sure they're okay. See how they are, because they're on the battleground. Remember, this was, had been going on for 40 days. You know, and we didn't have 24-hour news then. So it was a little bit distant as far as what was happening and what was going on. I'm sure by that time that the word of the giant had spread. I mean, David ran there, got up in the morning and was there by the time they got up in the morning and were going out to the battleground with the loaves of bread and whatever. I don't know, maybe he had a fast donkey going with him or something. I'm not sure, but he got all the way there in that period of time. I wanted to see how far it was. It's a fair amount. It's miles and miles and miles. And then he fought the giant that afternoon or sometime during that day, I assume. I mean, so it was an eventful day for sure. But anyway, in the process of trying to just get my head wrapped around what was going on, because I think it's important to do, to have more of it. God purposely was very descriptive about some things in the Bible for a purpose, right? If he's very descriptive about it, he wants us to have a right description of it and a right understanding of it. In this case, he was very descriptive about Goliath and about the battle and about the battle scene and, you know, in David's approach. So I think it's important to try to do it. It's sad to me, you know, in reading so much of the commentary, because that Google thing, you know, that you can look up everything on. I mean, it's an amazing thing. You know, it's an amazing thing. And my wife laughs at me because, you know, here I am on the laptop, you know, looking things up, you know, going, what has happened to you, David, doing it? But, it is an amazing thing. The thing that you always need to keep in mind is there's a lot of crap on there, too, you know. And it's all true, yeah. And when it comes to biblical things, let me just say there's a lot of crap on there and a lot of you better be willing to wade through it, you know. I mean, it's always a dangerous thing. You guys understand the premise that a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, and you know, a wrong first impression takes 10 other impressions to correct. You know, it's always a dangerous thing to read something on the internet, because if we don't have any real baseline knowledge of it, or if it validates and agrees with our presuppositions already, that's a very dangerous thing, right? Because it's going to take that's going to solidify in our mind whatever's there, and it's going to be hard to get past that. So it's important to try to wade through some of the junk. So much of it is, you know, I was talking to my wife about this, trying to figure it out. You know, so much of it is the whole Sunday school ideal of David and Goliath, which I've talked about the last few weeks of us getting rid of. I mean, I look back to things in the 1600s. There was paintings and stuff, and I was looking at these paintings, and they had a different view then. They could paint some. I mean, there was one with David cutting Goliath's head off, and there was guts coming all out of his neck, you know, and on the ground, and things hanging, you know, off the side and stuff. And, you know, it was kind of sweet, you know, from a guy point, you know. But it's one, we got to have that one up here, you know, on the wall or something, you know. But and his head, it was about this big, you know, doing it. Which, the truth is, if he was 9.5 foot tall, you know, taller than a speaker, you know, doing it. I mean, his head wasn't our size. His head was big. You know, here's David holding this giant noggin, man, doing it. But the sad thing is that even back then, I mean, I look at it, and so many of those pictures are a little skinny, scrawny boy fighting this giant. And I know you say, well, David, there's a lot of smart people that have looked, you know, I know. And there's a lot of, and I'm not the smart one, but there's some things that give us certainly a different impression. Remember one of the first descriptions of David, and this is the baseline I think is important. Before David and Goliath happened, before the fight happened, before he moved in and began to interact with Saul, what is the description of David? In verse 8, chapter 16, verse 18, it says, "Then one of the young men answered," because Saul said, "Provide for me now a man who can play well and bring him here to me." "Then one of the young men answered and said, 'Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, and the Lord is with him. Now that just doesn't sound like a 12-year-old, okay? I mean, that's a man. You know, he's described as a man. Now, what does that mean? Well, my guess is that means he was 18 or so anyway. You know, he was a man. Right after this, right after David kills Goliath, Saul put him in charge of all. I don't quite understand because he had Abner as a commander in chief, but he put him in charge of his men of war. Well, the men of war are not going to follow a 12-year-old. You know, this guy had to be somebody that was a man. Now, was it about him being a man, and so he was tough enough to go fight Goliath? That isn't at all what I'm saying. I just think that it is very dangerous for us to... The enemy is very careful to... Are very purposeful in giving us bad descriptions. Kind of like the current, you know, that we grew up with, and I realized that it changed a little bit because he became a white, middle-class guy, you know, good-looking hippie, you know, with shorter hair or something is in our period of time. But the pictures of Jesus, you know, I mean, we've talked about that, but I think the enemy is very purposeful. I was watching it last night in the Catholic Church, you know, and they've got Jesus on a cross, and they carrying this giant cross up and down all around the aisles, you know, golden cross, and there's this image of Jesus supposedly on there. And he's this pathetic, skinny dude. Jesus wasn't a macho man either. It said that he was undescript, and he purposely and very purposely was undescript, or we'd all try to look like him, you know. Maybe the current pictures we have are good, because none of us want to dress like that. You know, we don't want to look like some hippie. Maybe some of the Calvary Chapel guys do, but not us. So want to dress like this hippie in sandals and, you know, especially my kids, you know, doing it. They think long hair is from the devil, you know, for sure. Grew up in a different era. I understand that. But still, he's a pathetic man that I would not follow into battle. Right? Most of the pictures we have of Jesus right there are of a pathetic man that I don't respect. As I said before, I get the impression I could take him, you know? And that's not somebody I fear, you know, doing it. David is the same way. David became a leader of men, was a leader of men. It wasn't because of his physical stature that he killed Goliath. But I think that it's important to not let the enemy give us these false descriptions of what's there. Okay, so I think that is important. Otherwise, the predominance of what we have for information in pretty vivid descriptions here don't make any sense, and we just read over them. I mean, I get it from here, not from what I want it to be. I get it from what I see in the Bible here, you know, about the way things went down. So last week we talked about the fact that David ran to the battlefield. Remember, he ran there. Got up early in the morning, packed all that stuff there, and got there just as all these men of war were gathering in a giant circle, it says, in the encampment, and were getting ready to go out to the battlefield. So they were camped on a plateau. The Philistines were camped on another plateau. The valley, they were probably about a mile apart. You know, the bottom of the valley was somewhere half a mile plus wide, flat in the valley. And the brook went through there. Remember, there was a brook where he got the stones. That was really a brook that went through there. And they were just getting up to come out in battle array. And they were started shouting the war chants, okay? Let's go, come on, guys, let's go get them! It was probably more orchestrated than that. There was probably some serious chanting so that the Philistines heard, whoa, these guys are waking up thinking, dude. But we have a problem here. They've been doing this for 40 days, okay? And they were still, come on, let's go. We're ready. We're going to go. And they for 40 days, they've been getting up, and David runs to meet his brothers and starts talking to his brother. And this, just as this Philistine comes out, and what does it say? You know, when all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. Oops. You know, my tough guy front is kind of blown here, huh? Now, everybody else is doing it. Of course, you're like this. One of the interesting things to me, and we'll read about the relationship with Jonathan and David coming up here, too, because, you know, that's a wonderful, wonderful story that the enemy's tried to steal, too. But that is there's a wonderful story of their relationship. But I was thinking about it when I was reading this, and you know what? Jonathan was there, too. And Saul. Both those guys were there watching this battle unfold, watching this battle happen, okay? Now, we have some description of Jonathan, right? Remember a couple chapters ago we read about Jonathan? Jonathan the BA? Jonathan that decided in the middle of the night when there was Philistines like the sand of the sea that were encamped on another hill, and everybody had fled scared, was hiding under bushes, it said, and in caves, and all the Israelites have fled from Saul, and there was only 600 left of thousands that were kind of going, ooh, because it was like the sand of the seashore. They had 30,000 chariots. And there was 600 Israelites left. Saul's kind of going, this ain't looking good. And him and Jonathan are the only guy with swords. Remember? Because the Philistines had taken them away. And the rest of them had sticks and wooden pitchforks and things. They didn't have iron because the Philistines had been purposeful. So here they are, like the sand of the seashore and chariots. Fortunately, they'd positioned themselves, when you look at the topography of it, they'd positioned themselves in a way where the chariots weren't going to be real effective, you know, because they weren't four-wheel drive. And they were on top of like a plateau, you know, had to come out of the canyons doing it. So they were feeling a little bit good about that. Of course, if they took off and tried to run across the plains and get away, they were going to get run down, obviously. So they were kind of trapped there doing it. And what Jonathan say to his armor bearer? Come on, let's go see if the Lord will deliver us, right? Remember that? He goes, let's go see if the Lord will deliver us. There's like the sand of the seashore across there. And he goes across there and goes across this valley that's between the two of them again. And he sets at the bottom of it, and they see him coming. And they go, oh, look at the Israelites are coming out of their holes. They're coming out of their holes. See you, Lisa. And Jonathan goes, well, come on, to his arm, but let's go see if the Lord delivers. If they tell us to come up and see him. I mean, there's a whole encampment. He didn't tell. They told nobody. Nobody knew where they went. It wasn't like, hey, you guys, if I don't show up in 10, head this way again, maybe I could be in trouble. You know, no, told no one. And he went up that hill and he took them on, right? Took them on. And started whacking and stacking, killing with the swords again. You know, I mean, the reality of fighting with swords and spears and sticks and knives, and I mean, it's ugly. Ugly. I mean, just, and here he did. Him and his armor bearer just start whacking to the point, and what happened? And God put this fear in these people, started shaking the earth, right? And these people were terrified, and they all ran. Like the sand of the seashore, and they all ran. Now, did it require Jonathan? In a very practical, real, down-to-earth, blood-and-guts, sword-wielding, go-do-it? Yeah. I mean, we can look at it now and go, well, God was going to defend him, no big deal. Really? Like the same God that we believe will defend us? Like the same God that's here now? Like the same God that's promised to be our dad in our lives? So why don't we act like Jonathan? You know? I mean, Jonathan took on, he didn't let circumstances determine him. He said, it isn't about circumstances. God doesn't deliver. I mean, he said the same thing. God doesn't deliver by sword and by spear. God delivers by his power. And they routed the Philistines. They all ran. Then his dad and the 600 went, come on, you guys, look at, they're running, man. And they went over there and stole their swords and started killing them and started a long-term battle with the Philistines doing it. So here we are. They're in another battle. The Philistines had come back and going, oh, yeah? And the Philistines had a reputation. Historically, they often tried to settle their battles because, you know, it gets really ugly when you put a whole bunch of people, you know, thousands of men, 30,000 here and 30,000 there with a bunch of sharp things and say, let's go see what happens here. You know, this isn't like we're going to go play football, right? Where there's like a referee and, you know, I mean, this is like, we're going to die. There's going to be homeless, fatherless children and widows and nobody to farm and nobody to take care of my family. I mean, this is a big deal. And people are going to get killed. You know, it's not like, you know, I don't know what it is right now, you know, since we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, the total casualties are under 10,000, I think, still. I'm not exactly sure, but I think the total American casualties are under 10,000. I mean, there's battles when they were fisticuffs doing it where there was 30, 40, 50,000 men died. That day, boom, with swords and spears. I mean, it was nasty. So the ability to alleviate the thought would be, it might be better to be a servant of a Philistine than dead. I've got to pay him taxes. I've got to pay homage to him. But I can feed my family. I can take care of my children. You know, I can still do those things. So sometimes the battles were settled. We'll take our baddest dude. You take your baddest dude. Whoever wins is the victor. Okay? I mean, doesn't make a lot of sense to us, but that was a common thing. The problem was their baddest dude was 9.5 feet tall. You know? Yeah, somewhere in there. So, depending on what exactly the length of a cubit is, but it's 9.6, yeah, big. So, and you know, he wasn't just this doo-doo oaf, man. He was a warrior fighter that had 200 to 250 pounds of armor on him. And yet he was a fighter and a warrior. You know, I mean, a spearhead that weighs 15 pounds. Try to throw that baby, you know. I mean, that wasn't even the bronze javelin. That was just the spear, you know, doing. I mean, he was the real deal. And they sent him out here and everybody went, oh man. So here we are, right? So get this setting. And you need to understand, this is a very common thing to do. I mean, even Jonathan and Saul, they were right there going, it said, and even Saul ran in fear, right? Saul was afraid of him. And Saul, of all the people who should go fight him, I mean, Saul was a warrior dude. I mean, it says he was a valiant man, he was a valiant warrior, he came from a lineage of valiant warriors. I mean, these were fighter guys, you know. These were the real, you know, Arabians on black horses and, you know, big swords. And I mean, he was a bad dude. He came from a bad family of fighters, good fighters. And yet he was scared, right? And his son Jonathan, it doesn't say anything about him, what he was doing or what he wasn't doing. But he didn't react. So what is the feeling? All you men know this feeling. And you women should know it too. Here's something right in front of your face, coming directly against you, mocking you, belittling you for 40 days and 40 nights, and you're too afraid to do anything about it. Where does that leave you? Guilt, shame, hiding. And what's the last thing you want to hear? What's the matter with you? Why don't you grow a set? Pardon me, that's a male term, but it's okay. We all understand that, okay? Why don't you man up here, right? Doing it. I mean, how's that going to go? Not well, probably. So here comes David into camp and says, what's going on here? And Goliath comes out and everybody runs scared and he goes, wait, what's going on here? You know, what is this about? This guy is taunting. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine? I don't know why they always refer to that, but it's an important thing. This unholy, unclean, uncircumcised Philistine. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? Understand something very specifically. David was not determined by circumstances. I don't know that there's too many lessons that could be learned more valuable than this. David was not determined by circumstances. David was determined by his view of God. Okay? That is the difference right there. That is the difference. The tendency of all of us on some level is to be determined by our circumstances. Whether our good feelings, whether our bad feelings, whether our fears, whether it's the IRS, whether it's bills due, whether it's needing to accelerate in business, whether it's the opportunity to make a bunch of money or not make a bunch of money, all of us are determined very easily by our circumstances. By rejection of people, right? It's a major one. People are not going to like us. People are going to think less of us. People are going to think little of us. People that we really care about are going to reject us or mock us or belittle us. Or we get determined by circumstances very easily versus turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face and the things of earth will grow strangely dim. Okay? The circumstances become not the issue. This is no different than today, okay? We can be men and women like David. The only thing necessary is that we are determined by the character and nature of the true and living God, this God. Everybody talks about a God. I think Mr. Trump says he is a Christian. He's a very confused man. He certainly is not Christian. And even though they say the Pope isn't that one of the most profound things you probably didn't follow it, but one of the most profound things I've ever heard on the news media. Okay? Here's the Pope. Okay? Now I don't agree with the Pope. I don't think he's the Holy Father. I think pretty strongly he is not. Okay? As they do. But for everybody else in this world, what do they think? This guy is the pinnacle of Christianity, right? This guy has the direct word from God more than anyone else on this earth. That's what they feel, right? And what did they say about him? Who is he to judge if Donald Trump is a Christian or not? How can the Pope even judge? Of all people that you would put there, the Pope should be able to make that assessment. Okay? If somebody's going to be able to in this world. But yet, that is such a profound, strong lie from the pit of hell that we can't judge. You know? It's an amazing thing because if somebody says a prayer right here and says, you know, ABC, Jesus coming in, we will say, you are born again. You are born again. You're going to spend eternity with God. Now that's a pretty big judgment call, isn't it? Based on some words that came out of the guy's mouth? That's a little bit insane if you stop and think about it. But the amazing thing is that how strongly it influences. The whole news media is going, oh yeah, the Pope, he shouldn't judge. I mean, it's a profound, profound thing. I'm not sure where I got off on that. But Donald Trump is not a man of God. It shows it by his life. He's never been. He's never stood for things of God. You know, is he redeemable? Absolutely. Do I hope he is? Absolutely. Do I hope this thing kicks his butt so hard he cries out to Jesus? I do. You know. Unfortunately, Jesus said real directly, it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to get through an eye of a needle. He's got a tough road in front of him. Tough road to get there. So, here we are. David comes up on this thing. He comes up to his brothers. He starts talking. All these guys are going, yeah, come on, boys, let's go do it. Let's go kick some butt here. And David comes up and goes, and they all recoil like this because we're used to it by now. We accept the fact that we're all kind of scared here, right? So we're good. We're all good, right? Because we're all in this together, right? I'm not going to say you're a pussy because then, you know, okay, let me stop for a moment here because that just got recorded, I assume. I don't necessarily need to cut it, okay? And I've been confronted for that. The word is pusillanimous, okay? You need to understand this. Look it up in the Webster's Dictionary. It has nothing to do with a female. Nothing to do with sexual. Okay? Right? What does it mean, Billy? It means a coward. Detestable coward. Lacking courage. Someone lacking courage. That's where it comes from. It does not come from girls. You guys don't get to claim it. It comes from a Webster's term that we use. And when we call each other that, it is absolutely a valid word. So, that is true. We looked it up the other Thursday night. It was there. So don't quit. Don't say I'm a sexist and I'm perverted and I'm saying bad words. I'm not Donald Trump here, okay?
All right.
Whatever, yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. So, anyway. Yeah.
Someone having the attribute of
pusillanimous. So, that is the word. that is the word. Look it up. So, anyway, Google thing I was talking about. Yeah, look it up. So, no, probably don't want to Google that. Not in this world. Okay? Probably not in this world. So, but look it up in Webster's or something on the dictionary. Nonetheless, excuse me. So here's David coming up and going, did you hear what he said? Did you hear what this guy said? He just taunted the true and living God. What? And they're all going, you shut up. You shut up. You know? What? I mean, his brothers are going, oh, we were doing okay here, accepting each other's tendencies. Okay? And you come in here and you point it out. Was David trying to do that? No. Did David have any intention of killing Goliath when he went there? I'm certain he didn't. I'm certain he had no idea of killing Goliath. That was not his intention that morning when he ran there. That was not his intention. He would have eaten his Wheaties before that or rested up a little or something. Ooh, I don't know what. But that was not his intention in going there to kill Goliath. He had no intention of fighting Goliath when he went there. But Goliath made a mockery, cried out and tried to mock and did mock his God. Did mock his dad. David, what does it say? The Spirit of God was with him and came on him mightily. And David, listen, and this guy was mocking the armies of the living God. This guy was belittling the armies of the little God. What was Satan's, talked about it last week, we'll move on from this point. Greatest battle, I believe, that he came on, and most of us, is that he was condemned and ridiculed and mocked. How many, any of you that have earnestly began a pursuit of God, right, and earnestly began trying to follow God, have gone back to your families, brothers, sisters, siblings, aunts, uncles, whoever, and gotten the, whether direct words or certainly the emotional feedback of, who do you think you are now? Who are you to judge? Who are you to judge us? Who do you think you are standing up above us? And all of us know the power that has. All of us know the extreme leverage that has on what we do and don't do. On letting that circumstance of rejection by the people who we hold most valuable in our life, letting that circumstance of rejection cause us to recoil or back away or quit. Right? David, the enemy hit David with that, and that was, I think, that was a much more ferocious attack even than that giant that was standing out in the field. And David was not to be determined by that. David said, I'm just talking about, are we going to stand here and let somebody mock the true and living God? Are we going to stand here and let somebody taunt the armies of the living God? What do we look like? Who are we? He has mocked my father. He has belittled my father. You know, I don't often think of that, but I thought at times about it. You know, I don't think that there would be too much more ferocious than having my sons with me when somebody began to physically threaten me. I would pity that man, okay? I would pity that man because my sons would fight to the death ferociously. I know that, okay? Maybe my son-in-law is even doing that. I don't know. He might say, yeah, whatever. So, but I would pity that. And my purpose for saying that is that when somebody threatens your father, you become very ferocious. You know, there is no... You lose fear. You lose your ability to, and this is David. Somebody was mocking his father. And that's the relationship he had with God. I mean, You guys, the heart of this man is so sweet. Let me read it, okay? Because here's David that goes, he's talking, going, who is this to mock? And we say this guy was just trying to, you know, we could imply, well, he was just trying to figure out what was going to be done for him, you know? Well, he was just trying to figure out, you know, well, what it means. You're going to be free of taxes and you're going to get this, you're going to get that. That is not what David was implying, because he was saying strongly, I'm willing to go do this. To the point where they said, in verse 31 of chapter 17, it says, when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul. And he sent for him. Okay? Now, he wasn't sending him just to check and see, now, what did you say you were going to do for the man doing this? Obviously, he'd inferred, I'm willing to go do this, man. If God wants to use me, I'm willing to be used. And you can kind of see David ramping up here. Okay? I mean, he just come off this multi-miles getting there to come to the thing, and he comes in, and he sees this happening, and I'm sure he was embarrassed and thought sad for his brothers and his fellow men, and what are we doing here? You guys have let the enemy oppress you. You guys have let the enemy rule you with fear. When we see the enemy dominating, controlling, ruling someone with fear, we should have the same response as David. Okay? Turn your eyes on Jesus, man. Do not let the circumstances determine you here. So, Saul sent for him. And David said to Saul, now remember, understand, this is not a stranger, in spite of the inference and what is said about this being. Who was David to Saul? David was his armor bearer. Okay? Again, it says Saul made him his armor bearer right at the beginning. He does not make a 14-year-old his armor bearer. Or a 12-year-old his armor bearer. You know, I mean, tough little 14-year-olds, that's fine. That's not who I want being my primary line of protection and defense, okay? I mean, David was obviously a man that was trustworthy enough that Saul loved him, it said, and he trusted him enough that he had made him his armor bearer. So when David comes back to Saul, Saul knows exactly who he is. He's his armor bearer. He knows this guy. It's somebody who he respected enough to put him in the position to protect him. When the words of, he said, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him, this giant. Your servant, and this is a sweet thing about David. Understand something about David's life. David understood submission to authority. I would suggest that this is one of the more important, profound aspects of David's life, which gave him that character that God said made him a man after his own heart. Okay? David understood authority. David had been crowned king, remember? He'd been anointed king by Saul, by Samuel, the prophet, man. This guy was like the authority from God. But Samuel had anointed David king already. He was anointed king. How does he address Saul? He said, your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Saul said to David, you are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. That's part of what we get the 12-year-old thing. If you look at the word youth, it's not anything. That does not mean a 12-year-old doing it. It's typically described to anybody who's a young man, you know. Is a 25-year-old a young man? Yeah. You know, he is. Then and now doing it even. So it doesn't, that's not an age thing. That's just a division between, or a distinction between old and young. Old men like me and young men. So, he has been a warrior. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep. Again, where did David learn how to slay Goliath? Tending his father's sheep. Where are we going to learn how to slay Goliath? You know, doing what the stinking sheep, tending sheep. I mean, why, God, you have me doing this purposeless job, tending these stupid sheep. I'm doing this. They're helpless, stupid, stinky sheep. And they are. My kids call them mountain maggots, you know, because we hate in the mountains, wherever they are, they're just these There's sheep that go on like maggots running over the earth and eating everything, and their dogs are with them. They run every animal out in the area and ooh, you know. But what's that? You poop everywhere, you know. At least they leave something good. Fertilizer there. But David, and again, the lesson from last week is so important that God, if you have a desire and long to know God and are willing to let God be Lord of your life, you are in process of learning how to slay giants. You are in process and training right now, right where you are. What are you doing? How do you take it? So often we go, yeah, well, when this happens, well, when I'm done having to do this, well, this meaningless thing that I'm doing right now, well, I need to do something with purpose. Is God in control of this world? Is he sovereign? If you're doing what you're doing right now and you are willing to be submissive to authority over you, to God over you, and the authority he puts you under, even Saul, this raging king that was tormented by a demon, and David addresses him as Sir. And we'll watch David continue in that submissive state to authority that God had put in his life. But are we willing to in that time go, this is my training ground, man. I don't care if it's working at Albertsons or chopping wood or beating the snow off it with a maul or whatever we might be doing. Okay? Working for Casey? Oh my gosh, there's a training ground, okay?
I know, I was just looking at your son over there, just no smile on his face. You know, okay.
So he's looking kind of, is he trying to be like David or something? Look at him. I mean, look at that muscle shirt, man. What are you doing? You going to show us some muscles? Is that what you're going to do? No? Leave him alone. Wherever God has us right now, are we 100% in? And that God, you're training me. David had not been willing to be in training of trusting God instead of circumstances, of fearing God and not fearing man and not fearing circumstances, if he hadn't been willing to go through that training and submissively been in that training, when he walked up here, what would he have done? Like everyone else had done. It's a guarantee. He would have gone, oh man, that dude's big. I think he's big. There's no way a man can go take him. I mean, this guy's, but he didn't at all, because he had let the sheep in the position God had put him in do him. David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock, I went out after him and I attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and I struck him and I killed him. I love that. You know, that is, I'm sorry, girls, you don't understand. What? That's a man's man. Right? Is there any man here that doesn't want to be that guy? If there is, then we need to have a talk, okay? Okay? I mean, that is what we all long for, right? I mean, when it happened, we might think differently, okay? But we all dream of such things. Killing a lion or a bear with your bare hands, you know, in doing it. David had done that. But understand this. David was not prideful. David was not arrogant. David was not bragging, because understand that your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them. Why? Since he has taunted the armies of the living God. And David said, The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. David looked at the character and nature and strength of his father, of God. That's where he lived his life. That's how he lived his life. That's what he saw. He didn't see the giants this big. We're talking God here, you know? This guy, so what? One human's this big, one human's this big, and God's how big? I don't know, but big, okay? Really big. Like a couple feet don't really matter, you know, in the deal. And David's looking at this and going, God delivered me When I was in the center of God's will, doing what God told me to do, being obedient to my Father, being a servant, tending these stinking sheep, God gave me the opportunity to grow up and be a man and go kill a lion and a bear with my bare hands. Maybe that's why my kids are always looking, Dad, what's the matter with you? I mean, there's few things in life that I think would be cooler than having a grizzly bear come at you. And I think it's from reading this my whole life, you know, growing up with it, going, that would be cool. Now, what would I do at that time? Well, I hope I wouldn't poop my pants, but, you know, it would be, to me, one of the most wondrous things, just that, let's do it. And David had done it, not a grizzly. They weren't quite grizzly bears, but I don't know that it really matters, because it was God that delivered him, okay? You know what, Saul, now understand this. This isn't some strange little geeky 12-year-old boy that just came up and said, I want to go kill this Goliath guy, right? It wasn't. Why? Because what is his immediate response? Saul said to David, go, and may the Lord be with you. I mean, this is happening quick, okay? Quick. He showed up that morning. He's saying, who is mocking the true and living God? We cannot. God will deliver us. What are you guys doing? What are you guys doing standing for 40 days, 40 nights? I know. You're pretty embarrassed. You feel bad about yourself. But let's go. I mean, David was not arrogant standing above him. I mean, his brothers are going, get out of here. You're making us look bad. I mean, we're the big brothers. We should be doing this, and we're scared. So who do you think you are, you smart-ass little kid? Oh, excuse me again. So, okay. I get a little fired up about this story, okay? Okay. So this is another thing that dispels the 12-year-old deal. Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head and clothed him with armor. And David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. Now, you know, the Sunday school story that I grew up with was you've got a little 12-year-old boy and you've got this man that's putting all these clothes on him and his hat's down over his head like this and he's sideways and he can't see anything and he's got... Who would do that and say, now go fight? I mean, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. And Saul was a man who was a head above every other man. So, the armor obviously would have worked. It didn't say that he couldn't move. It said that he hadn't tested them. He went to walk around. He hadn't fought in those. He hadn't killed a bear and a lion in those. He hadn't done any activity in those. All of a sudden he had... Now understand, this is not a... David was Saul's armor bearer. Was he familiar with Saul's armor? Yes. Was it, well, let's see if this fits you. Let's see. No, he put it on knowing full well the size. Knowing full well how big it was. So, it's dispelling the 12-year-old myth, okay? David put Saul's armor, who was a man, ahead above every other man. Now again, this isn't about David's physical prowess. But, let's not let, the Bible's pretty clear here to give us a bunch of description. Let's not let come up with some concoction that looks way different than what this does, okay? David said, he tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. Now, Saul had to have immense trust in David. He's putting the stake of his nation on David, right? I mean, he is putting, if David goes and loses to Goliath, what is the consequence? The nation serves the Philistines. He is putting all, writing everything on the line here. I mean, there's a side of it that, oh, let's forget about this deal. Let's just go 30,000 against 30,000, see what happens, okay? But he's writing it all on David going out. I mean, he says, go, and may the Lord be with you. And David took off the clothes, and he took his stick in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, and he put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. There's a side note, the Benjamites were known as sling guys. That region was known, you know, there's different areas that are known. I'll never forget when I was back shooting 3Ds and, shooting competitive archery stuff. there was, we traveling around the Northwest and stuff shooting. And there was a big meeting in the 3D Nationals back east and stuff. And there was this little group of guys from a town called Kamei, Idaho. They used to put a whooping on the whole nation as a team. And I thought, what are they, is it in the wild? Are they breeding them up there? I mean, what are they doing? Because every year after year, they'd go win the 3D Nationals. Okay, doing it. And these, out of Kamei. I mean, that's one of those towns you say, can anything good come out of Kamei? You know? I mean, it's a lot of drunk Indians come out of there, you know, doing it. But I mean, it's just this little town. The same thing is true of the Benjamites. They were known for being really good with slings. So, I mean, David learned it when he, I mean, the truth is, you're herding sheep around. What are you going to do? Pick up rocks and practice. Plus, I'm sure that David used it as to herd the sheep, even. Right? I mean, God wouldn't look at it. I mean, a sheep starts getting out of line, bam! Pop it on the butt. You want to pop it on the butt, not the head, because things go bad when you don't hit things in the right place. You know, dogs, sheep, stuff like that, you know, doing it. Some of you know, we don't need to keep talking about that one. So you want to make sure you're accurate with what you do. David become very accurate. So David was confident with that. David was, you know, felt good about it because he comes from a bunch of slingers that were good with slings. And this is a long sling. It's not a wrist rocket where you pick up little pieces of gravel or marbles. They probably threw golf ball size rocks when doing it. I mean, he planted it in his head, you know. And that's a round rock probably, because anybody who, you don't throw a sharp rock and with points, long pointy arrowhead type thing and with a sling, because it doesn't fly very well when you start throwing it and spinning and doing it. So you throw round rocks like a muzzleloader, much like that, and planted it in his head, okay? Planted this rock in his, anyway, he took his stick in his hand, he chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook, put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. So, he's coming off the side of this hill's almost a mile wide, he comes down off the side of this hill, and this Philistine's somewhere out there already, probably potentially taunting him, maybe he'd move back a little bit, because it says he rose up. The Philistine came on and approached David with his shield bearer in front of him. Ah, somebody's coming out. So, to do it. Then when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him. For he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. I'm not sure what handsome had to do with that. You're better looking than me or something? I'm not sure. I can't imagine a giant being really good looking anyway. You ever seen it? TV doesn't give us that. Movies don't give it. They're always ugly, man. They're always really ugly doing it. So I assume he was ugly because that's what we know, right? And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Now, remember I said David seemed to be ramping up here. From the time he got there and charged in, saw his brothers, how's it going, man? What's happening? Listen, saw this guy and going, whoa, what's going on here? This guy's mocking our God. And you know, how can this, and David, because here goes David, in to me, this display of violent willingness to lay his life down for his God, to defend his God, should be our character in all of us. And we are so passive in our relationship with God as a culture and as Christianity, and as men particularly, we have become so passive, and even esteemed passivity as being valid in the fight. It is not. Remember, the Philistine represents the spiritual warfare. The Philistines always represent the spiritual fight that we're still in now. And here's a prominent, big, spiritual battle that's going on, however it looks. And how does David deal with this? The Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with sword and spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you've taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly, both sides of this valley, all this assembly may know that the Lord is not delivered by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Then it happened, the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David. Then David did what? David didn't go, oh no. David said, he ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag, and he took from it a stone, he swung it, and he struck the Philistine on the forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. And he struck the Philistine and he killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran over, stood over the Philistine, and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him. And cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistine as far as the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Sharim, even to Gath and Ekron. And the sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. Then David took the Philistine's head. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. And he put his weapons in his tent. Jerusalem was a long ways away. Carrying this head. This giant ogre head thing doing it. Cut off. Stuff hanging out of it. Blood dripping. And he brought it. Now when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army. And don't misunderstand this. Abner, whose son is this young man? And Abner said, by your life, O king, I do not know. Now, I believe that this is not a thing of, I don't know who this guy is. Who is this guy? I don't know him. He was his armor bearer. Okay? He knew who David was. Right? You know what I think this is an example of? Saul has become very narcissistic. Saul has become very self-consumed. Right? And did he know? Who his dad was? He had sent word to his dad to let him come and play his harp and console him and let him be his armor bearer and come and take care of him and spend part of his time in the thing. But as self-consumed people do, we tend to forget. We tend to forget people. Oh yeah, what was that? It really didn't matter to him who David's dad was. He was using David. He said he loved him, but he was using him. So it wasn't a matter that he didn't know who David was. But he wanted to find out who his dad was because obviously he'd said, your family will be free from taxes forever in my kingdom. Right? And I will make your family rich, is what he promised. And the king said, you inquire whose son this youth is. So when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. I didn't care about getting blood all over things. Doing it. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? And David answered, I am the son of your servant, Jesse the Bethlehemite. Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. I encourage you to read that story, and that is the spirit, that is the attitude, that is the soul that we're to have as men. I don't care if you're working at the bank, if you're working for a glasses company, you're working for an appliance company, it doesn't matter. That is to be, we are to be passionate men about our God. We are not to be passive men. You know, we have a hard time going, oh, shoot. My wife would really like me to take the trash out. I don't really want it, so I'm going to pretend like I don't see it. What kind of a Goliath slayer are you? We have a hard time being men who are willing to do the right thing. Because God, our God, commanded us to serve our wives. Are we obedient to that? Do we look at the trash as being bigger than our God? Or do we look at our God and say, yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We are to be, it isn't about us. There's nobody here who isn't to have the heart of David. Women and men. He wasn't a special guy. He was. Because there's very few men that are willing to live their lives based on the character and nature of God and who he's revealed himself to be. Rather than our own physical desires and our own physical fears and our own physical limitations and our own the parameters that the enemy has worked very hard to hold us in bondage to and hold us down by. We're to be warriors like David. The battle has not become less intense. The Philistines are still in our face. The spiritual battle is as real here as it's ever been. The fight is as strong as it's ever been. You want to look around at marriages and children? You need to go spend some time in that high school? You want to go, you know, poor Craig. I mean, the boys here the other day, you know, has been in pursuit of God for a good part of his life. And I talked to him, where's your wife? She's at Light on the Mountain. Because that's where she goes. Maybe you guys don't know what that is. But that's the spiritual center right next to where the Dalai Lama establishes principalities and powers. And they worship demons and false gods. Very spiritual. But worship a completely different God. You don't think that oppresses him and pounds him and beats him and stifles him from pursuing God fervently with all his heart? I contend he's getting his fanny kicked in the battle. He's seeing Goliath and going, oh man, I hope somebody else takes, I can't deal with this. The cost is too high, man. I could lose my life doing it. We confront those battles in this town. And if we don't, we're just pathetic. We're not engaged. Because those battles are here. Those fights are here. What kind of men are we going to be? What kind of women are we going to be? You women fight the same kind of battles. You know, your Goliath might be about this tall. Okay? At times. But you fight those battles. They want to whip you. And want to cause you to react and respond based on circumstances, not on the character and nature of your God that you claim to serve. Let's be David's, man. Let's be men and women with hearts after God. That is the explanation. That is showing the heart after God. God gave that description to David like he gave to no other one, but let me just guarantee you, the purpose and the power of David was determined by the fact that the Spirit of God came mightily on him. Okay? Do we believe that the Spirit of God can come mightily upon us? We say that. And if so, our life should look like that. Not as impotent humans limited by our flesh. But as sons of the Most High God who He empowered. And He does not deliver by sword or by spear. But by His power and His might. Let's pray. Dear God Almighty, please save us from ourselves. Please save and redeem us from our flesh. Please cause us to address a holy God, not one we've made up that's kind of little and we could take. If we believe we can serve God when we want to and not serve when we want to, we believe that's a God we can take. That I can stand in authority over Him when I want to. That means we do not believe in the God that David believed in, we do not believe in the God of the Bible. We do not believe in Yahweh. God, I'm sorry for that. You say, James, count it joy when you encounter various trials. knowing that the testing of your faith will produce endurance. And let endurance have its perfect and complete result, that you will be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. God, help us to understand that is not about us in our flesh being tried. That is a testing of our faith. Our faith is what we claim to believe about you. And when we put that to the test, in circumstances that we want to respond to, we want to determine, we want to control, we want to handle, when we put what we say is true about you to the test, that builds endurance. That's how David was trained. That he would be perfect and complete and lacking in nothing when he faced Goliath. God asks that you would teach us to count it all joy when we encounter various trials. Having the opportunity to put our faith, what we say about you, to the test. To see if it's real. You want us to live our lives in such a way that our view of you would always be challenged, because that will always be growing. Let our small view of you be crushed, God, please. But what we know about you, what we speak about you, what we intellectually give assent to about you can become real and determine us. If what we say about you does not determine us, we don't believe it. God, I ask that you would cause us all, every day, with our wives, with our children, in our homes, in our work, that is where we put our faith to the test so we can become Goliath slayers. So that we can have that heart and character of David where we run to the battle. Because we trust in you, we know who our dad is. And we will fight vehemently. We will lay our lives down for our dad, for God, for you. Jesus, please reign, be king. Please continue to have grace and mercy and patience in my life and all of our lives as we act in blasphemous ways and in disbelief. But God, please do not slow down in increasing our faith. If that means hard times, then God, please bring it on. I know my brothers and sisters might be mad at me for saying that. But there is nothing more important than having your character proven to the point where it determines my life, and I truly believe it. Challenge us all, God, with your Spirit. It is about your Spirit. We say, most of us in here would say that your Spirit lives in us. Whew. God, please cause us to look in the mirror and long that we would represent your character and your nature by the power of the Spirit. Not look like a pathetic David or whoever. I thank you for the privilege and honor of serving you. I thank you for the privilege and honor of being called just like your people were called. Those people that David said, you guys can't be determined by the circumstances. They have mocked our God. Cause us to be those leaders as men and women. The enemy has this valley and the people who desire to know you cowering in fear. From all different angles. And God, please cause us to be men and women without fear in the raising of our children, in our marriages, in our friendships, in the relationships we deal with and you put us in every day. Amen.